Hi, Dave Emery here. This is side one of For the Record program number 763, The Adventures of Eddie the Friendly Spook, part nine, Citizen Greenwald's Financial Angel. This program has been recorded on November 17th of the year 2013. I know that I had indicated that I would be alternating every other week with coverage of l'affaire Snowden, so to speak. However, an article was published this past week which answered a question that I had. Citizen Greenwald, that resolute champion of human liberty, Mr. Give Me a Nazi and I Will Defend Him Pro Bono Greenwald, is the leaking journalist of choice for Mr. Get Rid of Social Security and Bring Back the Gold Standard himself, Edward Snowden, Eddie the Friendly Spook, the Peach Fuzz Fascist. Greenwald has partnered with a Silicon Valley billionaire who is the founder and owner of eBay, a guy named Pierre Omidyar, last name capital O-M-I-D-Y-A-R. Now, Omidyar is an Iranian-born expatriate educated in Switzerland who, again, was the founder of eBay. And eBay bought out PayPal, the firm, of course, that was founded by Peter Thiel, who is arguably the capo mafioso of what is known as the PayPal Mafia. The press surrounding Pierre Omidyar has been nothing short of adulatory. He is supposed to be a wonderful guy, gives to all sorts of noble causes, supports Democratic political candidates. And so Glenn Greenwald's partnering with him, along with, by the way, Laura Poitras, P-O-I-T-R-A-S, and Jeremy Scahill, has been hailed as the dawning of a new day in American journalism. Noting, first of all, that Meg Whitman, the far-right-wing Republican, would-be governor of California, was the CEO of eBay for many years. Also, again, that eBay bought out PayPal from Peter Thiel, who explicitly rejects democracy-funded Ron Paul super PAC and doesn't think women should be allowed to vote. It basically placed Pierre Omidyar in the same general moneyed circles as Peter Thiel. And so I wondered whether Pierre Omidyar could really be as wonderful as he has been made out to be. Did a little research, found out that Omidyar was sort of a survivalist. He has all sorts of food and supplies stockpiled in Hawaii. He also has invested in a number of high-end resorts in Hawaii. Those generally are something you want to pay attention to. Not only are those kinds of things often money laundering vehicles for very nefarious interests, but when the rich go out to play, they generally like to gamble, take drugs, use prostitutes, look at pornography, including the nasty stuff, kiddie porn, snuff, and so forth, and the prostitutes often involve little boys and little girls. That, of course, is the province of organized crime, and organized crime always tracks back to the far right. This past week, there was a very important investigative piece that was published in NSFW Corp. Their website is NSFW, all capitals, North South Freedom West Corp., all one word, C-O-R-P. And this article is called The Extraordinary Pierre Omidyar by Mark Ames and Yasha Levine. Yasha, Y-A-S-H-A, Levine, of course, L-E-V-I-N-E. This was published by NSFW Corp. on November 15th of 2013. And we are going to read this into the record almost in its entirety. The title, The Extraordinary Pierre Omidyar, is deeply and purposefully sarcastic. As we're going to see, basically, and this is a long, complicated article, Omidyar is part of what are called the neoliberals. Now, for younger listeners, that doesn't mean that they're liberals. Liberal, in this sense, is in the sense of laissez-faire economics. It means very conservative, people who favor free markets in their entirety. What we are going to see is Pierre Omidyar's Omidyar Network, O-N. Again, Omidyar, capital O-M-I-D-Y-A-R. And its investments in a number of different things. We are going to take a look at its investments in micro-lending in the third world, something that sounds very good on its surface, like the other projects that he has backed, but in practice, it has further impoverished people who are already very poor, who can't afford to pay back the loans, and it has resulted in some real horror shows in the third world. In addition to microfinancing or micro-lending, we are also going to take a look at Omidyar and the Omidyar Network's funding of privatized education, particularly in the third world. This also is a cause championed by the ultra-rich, the 0.01 percenters, and it also has been roundly panned, and justly so, by intelligent critics. In particular, we're going to take a look at Bridge International, which was founded by Pierre Omidyar and which partners with the Pearson Corporation, P-E-A-R-S-O-N. That is a justly criticized company that has had a lot to do with the privatization of education, and by the way, and not incidentally, which also partnered with the Bertelsmann firm in order to form the world's largest publishing company. When Penguin and Bertelsmann merged, it formed a new corporation dominated, by the way, by Bertelsmann, that is the largest publishing English language, largest publishing firm in the world. It will dominate English language publishing. Bertelsmann, as we have seen, was the publishing house for the SS. Its house historian has written as recently as 1998 that the U.S. and Franklin Delano Roosevelt started World War II. And that is an interesting take indeed. What we are going to be seeing is that Pierre Omidyar, Citizen Greenwald's financial angel, is literally moving in the same circles as the Koch brothers, the billionaire funders of the Tea Party and far-right-wing causes. Pierre Omidyar, Greenwald's financial angel, moves in the same circles as the Ludwig von Mises Institute, Friedrich Hayek, a disciple of Ludwig von Mises. In other words, we are going to see that Pierre Omidyar is part and parcel to precisely the same elements we have been looking at so far, in particular the Palestinian Libertarian Organization, as I call it, the same deep fifth column that was involved with trying to shut down the government and that is actually engaged in a coup d'etat of sorts. So we're going to read this into the record. Then we're going to talk about some other recent activities of Citizen Greenwald. Again, that wonderful champion of human liberty, Mr. Give me a Nazi and I will defend him pro bono Greenwald. This article, The Extraordinary Pierre Omidyar, by Mark Ames and Yasha Levine, published by NSFW Corp on November 15th, 2013, reads in part as follows. The world knows very little about the political motivations of Pierre Omidyar, the eBay billionaire who is founding and funding a $250 million journalism venture with Glenn Greenwald, Laura Poitras, and Jeremy Scahill. By the way, Ms. Poitras' name, P-O-I-T-R-A-S, I have never heard it pronounced aloud. Continuing. What we do know is this. Pierre Omidyar is a very special kind of technology billionaire. We know this because America's sharpest journalistic critics have told us. In the piece headlined The Extraordinary Promise of the New Greenwald Omidyar Venture, unquote, the Columbia Journalism Review gushed over the announcement of Omidyar's project. And just in case their point wasn't clear, They added the amazing subhead, Adversarial Muckrakers plus Civic-Minded Billionaire equals a whole new world, unquote. They might have said a new world order, but that might have been giving away the secret. And then the authors Mark Ames and Yasha Levine go on to say, ah, yes, the fabled Civic-Minded Billionaire, unquote. You'll find him two doors down from the Tooth Fairy. There then is a recitation of the encomiums, the hagiographies of Pierre Omidyar and this new journalistic venture. And again, the praise of Omidyar has been lavish, and the praise of this new journalistic venture has been, if there's anything more than lavish, it has been that. An interesting update, though, to the Columbia Journalism Review's gushing announcement of the Omidyar Greenwald project is skipping down. Later, the Columbia Journalism Review updated the piece with this missing bit of, quote, oops, unquote, update. I should disclose that the Omidyar Network helps to fund the Columbia Journalism Review, something I didn't know until shortly after I published this post. Gee whiz, the Omidyar Network helps to fund the Columbia Journalism Review. Isn't that amazing that the Columbia Journalism Review would heap this sort of extraordinary praise on Pierre Omidyar and his partnership with Greenwald? Truly a wondrous occurrence. Skipping down. With all of these orgasmic accounts of Omidyar's, quote, idealism have in common, is a total absence of skepticism. America's smartest media minds simply assume that Omidyar is an exceptional, unquote, billionaire, a civic-minded billionaire, driven by, quote, idealism, unquote, rather than by profits. The evidence for this view is Pierre Omidyar's massive non-profit venture, Omidyar Network, which has distributed hundreds of millions of dollars to causes all across the world. And by the way, although this may be a non-profit venture, what it is basically doing is to fund for-profit ventures around the world. And the authors go on to comment here. And yet what no one seems able to specify is exactly what ideology Omidyar Network promotes. What does Omidyar's, quote, idealism, unquote, mean in practice? And is it really so different from the non-idealism of other, presumably bad, billionaires? It's almost as if journalists can't answer those questions because they haven't bothered asking them. So let's go ahead and do just that now. Since its founding in 2004, Omidyar Network has committed nearly $300 million to a range of non-profit and for-profit, quote, charity, unquote, outfits. An examination of the ideas behind the Omidyar Network and of the investments it has made suggests that its founder is anything but a, quote, different, unquote, sort of billionaire. Instead, what emerges is almost a caricature of neoliberal ideology, complete with the trail of destruction that ensues when that ideology is put into practice. The generous support of the Omidyar Network goes toward, quote, fighting poverty, unquote, through micro-lending, reducing third-world illiteracy rates by privatizing education, and protecting human rights by expanding property titles, private property rights into slums and villages across the developing world. The last project, by the way, refers to giving title rights to slum dwellers for their slums, which presumably would unlock some sort of entrepreneurial zeitgeist from within them. And in fact, it actually wound up making things a whole lot worse, which shouldn't come as a great surprise. Continuing, in short, Omidyar Network's philanthropy reveals Omidyar as a free market zealot with an almost mystical faith in the power of, quote, markets, unquote, to transform the world, end poverty, and improve lives, one micro-individual at a time. All the neoliberal guru cant about solving the world's poverty problems by unlocking the hidden micro-entrepreneurial spirit of every starving third worlder is put into practice by Omidyar Network's investments. Charity without profit motive is considered suspect at best, subject to the laws of unintended consequences. Good can only come from markets unleashed. And that translates into an ideology inherently hostile to government, democracy, public policies, redistribution of land and wealth, and anything smacking of social welfare or social justice. Or I would add, as Mussolini observed, il fascismo e il corporatismo. Fascism is corporatism. Continuing. In literature published by Omidyar Network, the assumption is the technology is an end in itself, that it naturally creates beneficial progress, and that the world's problems can be solved most effectively with for-profit business solutions. The most charitable thing one can say about Omidyar's non-profit network is that it reflects all the worst cliches of contemporary neoliberal faith. In reality, it's much, much worse than that. In many regions, Omidyar Network investments have helped fund programs that create worsening conditions for the world's underclass, widening inequalities, enhancing exploitation, pushing millions of people into crippling debt, and supporting anti-poverty programs that in some cases resulted in mass suicides by the rural poor. Pierre Omidyar was one of the biggest early backers of the for-profit micro-lending industry. Through Omidyar Network, as well as personal gifts and investments, he has funneled around $200 million into various micro-lending companies and projects over the past decade, with the goal of establishing an investment-grade microfinance sector that could be plugged into Wall Street and global finance. The neoliberal theory promised to unleash billions of new micro-entrepreneurs. The stark reality is that it saddled untold numbers with crushing debt and despair. One of his first major investments into micro-lending came in 2005 when Pierre Omidyar and his wife Pam gave Tufts University, their alma mater, $100 million to create the Omidyar Tufts Microfinance Fund, a managed for-profit fund dedicated to jump-starting the growth of the microfinance industry. At the time, Tufts announced that Omidyar's gift was the, quote, largest private allocation of capital to microfinance by an individual or family, unquote. With the Tufts Fund, Omidyar wanted to go beyond mere charitable donations to specific micro-lending organizations that targeted the developing world's poorest. At the same time, he wanted to create a whole new environment in which for-profit micro-lending companies could be self-sustaining and generate big enough profits to attract serious global investors. This idea was at the core of Omidyar's vision of philanthropy. He believed that microfinance would eradicate poverty faster and better if it was run on a for-profit basis and not like a charity. Skipping down. The idea behind microloans is very simple and seductive. It goes something like this. The only thing that prevents hundreds of millions of people living in extreme poverty from achieving financial success is their lack of access to credit. Give them access to microloans, referred to in Silicon Valley as seed capital, unquote, and these would-be successful business peasants and illiterate shantytown entrepreneur would pluck themselves out of the muck by their own homemade sandal straps. Just think of it. Hundreds of millions of peasants working as micro-individuals, taking out micro-loans, making micro-rational investments into their micro-businesses, dutifully paying their micro-loan payments on time, and working in concert to harness the deregulated power of the markets to collectively lift society out of poverty. It's a grand neoliberal vision. To that end, Omidyar has directed about a third of the Omidyar Network Investment Fund, or about $100 million, to support the micro-lending industry. The foundation calls this initiative financial inclusion, unquote. Shockingly, microloans aren't all they've cracked up that they've been cracked up to be. After years of observation and multiple studies, it turns out that the only people benefiting from microloans are the big global financial players, hedge funds, banks, and the usual Wall Street hucksters. Meanwhile, the majority of the world's microdebtors are either no better off or have been sucked into a morass of crippling debt and even deeper poverty, which offers no escape but death. Pick SKS Microfinance, that's Sam Kangaroo Sam Microfinance, an Omidyar-backed Indian microlender whose predatory lending practices and aggressive collection tactics have caused a rash of suicides across India. Omidyar funded SKS through Unitus, UNITUS, a microfinance private equity fund bankrolled by the Omidyar Network to the tune of at least $11.7 million. ON boosted SKS in its promotional materials as a microlender that's, quote, serving the rural poor in India, unquote, and that exemplifies a company that's providing, quote, people with the means to address their needs and improve their lives, unquote. In 2010, SKS made headlines and stirred up bitter controversy about the role that profits should play in anti-poverty initiatives when the company went public with an IPO that generated about $358 million, giving SKS a market valuation of more than $1.6 billion. The IPO made millions of dollars for its wealthy investors, including the Omidyar-backed Unitas Fund, which earned a cool $5 million profit from the SKS IPO, according to the Puget Sound Business Journal. Some were bothered, but others saw it as proof that the power of the markets could be harnessed to succeed where traditional charity programs supposedly hadn't. The New York Times reported, quote, an Indian company with rich American backers is about to raise up $350 million in a stock offering, closely watched by philanthropists around the world, showing that big profits can be made from small, helping hand loans to poor cowherds and basket weavers, unquote. Controversy or not, SKS embodied Omidyar's vision of philanthropy. It was a for-profit corporation that fought poverty while generating lucrative returns for its investors. Here would be proof positive that the profit motive makes everyone a winner. And then reality set in. In 2012, it emerged that while SKS IPO was making millions for its wealthy investors, hundreds of heavily indebted residents of India's Andhra Pradesh state were driven to despair and mass suicide by the company's cruel and aggressive debt collection practices. The rash of suicide soared at the peak of a large micro-lending bubble in Andhra Pradesh, in which many of the poor were taking out multiple microloans to cover previous loans that they could no longer pay. It was subprime lending fraud taken to the poorest regions of the world, stripping them of what little they had to live on. It got to the point where the chief minister of Andhra Pradesh publicly appealed to the state's youth and young women not to commit suicide by telling them, quote, your lives are valuable, unquote. The AP conducted a stunning, in-depth investigation of the SKS suicides, and their reporting needs to be quoted at length to understand just how evil this program is. The article begins, quote, first, they were stripped of their utensils, furniture, mobile phones, televisions, ration cards, and heirloom gold jewelry. Then, some of them drank pesticide. One woman threw herself into a pond. Another jumped into a well with her children. Sometimes the debt collectors watched nearby. What prompted the AP investigation was the gulf between the reported rash of suicides linked to SKS debt collectors and SKS's public statements denying any knowledge of or any role in the predatory lending abuses. However, the AP got hold of internal SKS documents that contradicted their public denials. Quote, more than 200 poor, debt-ridden residents of Andhra Pradesh killed themselves in late 2010, according to media reports compiled by the government of that South Indian state. The state blamed microfinance companies, which give small loans intended to lift up the very poor, for fueling a frenzy of over-indebtedness and then pressuring borrowers so relentlessly that some took their lives. The companies, including market leader SKS Microfinance, denied it. However, internal documents obtained by the Associated Press, as well as interviews with more than a dozen current and former employees, independent researchers, and videotaped testimony from the families of the dead, show top SKS officials had information implicating company employees in some of the suicides. The AP investigation and internal reports showed just how brutal the SKS microfinancing program was, how women were particularly targeted because of their heightened sense of shame and community responsibility. Here was the brutal reality of financial capitalism compared to the utopian blather-mouthed at Davos conferences or in the slick pamphlets issued by the Omidyar Network. Both reports, again quoting, both reports that SKS employees had verbally harassed over-indebted borrowers, forcing them to pawn valuable items, incited other borrowers to humiliate them, and orchestrated sit-ins outside their homes to publicly shame them. In some cases, the SKS staff physically harassed defaulters, according to the report commissioned by the company. Only in death would the debts be forgiven. The videos and reports tell stark stories. One woman drank pesticide and died a day after an SKS loan agent told her to prostitute her daughters to pay off her debt. She had been given 150,000 rupees or $3,000 in loans, but made only 600 rupees or $12 a week. Another SKS debt collector told the delinquent borrower to drown herself in a pond if she wanted her loan waived. The next day, she did. She left behind 4 children. One agent blocked a woman from bringing her young son weak with diarrhea to the hospital, demanding payment first. Other borrowers, who could not get any new loans until she paid, told her that if she wanted to die, they would bring her pesticide. An SKF staff member was there when she drank the poison. She survived. An 18-year-old girl pressured until she handed over 150 rupees or $3 meant for a school examination fee, also drank pesticide. She left behind a suicide note, work hard and earn money. Do not take loans. We're going to talk more about this in side two. However, this wraps up side one of For the Record program number 763, The Adventures of Eddie the Friendly Spook, part 9, Citizen Greenwald's Financial Angel. This is being recorded on November 17th of the year 2013. My name is Dave Emery. Ciao.